You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Cale Smith. Joining me today is Andy Comer.
How's it going?
Brandon Cooley.
Hey, everybody.
And then Nick Brisby.
Howdy.
And today we are going to be talking about Dunkirk and Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. That was a mouthful. And on top of that, we are also going to be discussing the box office of July, because I feel like, as Andy mentioned on the Real Film Chatter podcast, and a lot of other people that do box office reports have mentioned, it is a very crowded month, and it's not really working out for everyone, apparently. So with that said, I'm going to ask Andy, what do you think of the box office first? And then I'll go, and then I'll start, and then we'll go Brandon and Nick. How's that sound?
Sounds good. The box office this month, or this whole year, has been really, like, what's expected to do great isn't doing as great. And then we have a few outliers, but the outliers aren't as big as usual, because usually, or well, what's become usual is like $4+ billion movies every year. We're looking at this year only having three, because Star Wars will probably and that just blows my mind. And the fact that Spider-Man Homecoming is going to come in right around Amazing Spider-Man 2 just blows my mind.
Just barely.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. People are sleeping on War for the Planet of the Apes. It's really crazy to me that so many of these, like, I understand, like, sequels, you know, like, they start, like, making less and stuff, but, like, for everything to drop so much, like, nothing is really coming up besides, like, Beauty and the Beast and Wonder Woman, stuff like that, are the only real surprises. This whole year, though, box office-wise, has been really disappointing. There's a lot of factors to that, but it's just... was not anticipating it to be this slow. Hopefully it turns around, but I don't see anything to do that besides, like, Thor, Justice League will be okay, and then Star Wars at the end of the year. But I guess we'll see what it comes up at the end of the month, or at the end of the year.
Yeah, because here's the thing about the box office, and it, last weekend, Dunkirk was number one, overperforming with $50 million. And then you had Girls Trip, which surprisingly did very well. Good job for that movie. And then you have Spider-Man and War for the Planet of the Apes. And then you have Valerian bombing, which we kind of expected Valerian to not do so well because it wasn't so greatly marketed. But going through that top five, I mean, you would have expected War for the Planet of the Apes to at least end a little bit stronger than, not so far behind, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which made around $600 million worldwide. And then, of course, he mentioned Spider-Man Homecoming, which is barely going to crack $700 million worldwide. And on top of that, I just feel like this month in general, you know, coming out of June, where, like, disappointing films, not just, you know, in quality, but in box office as well, with The Mummy, Transformers, and Cars 2, and Despicable Me 3. It's just like, was there any way that studios could have tried to avoid all just piling up? Because if you look at July, this was a very highly anticipated month of movies, where everyone tried to show a movie every week. Like, I mean, we had people that wanted to really see Spider-Man, and then we had people that wanted to see War, and we had people that wanted to see Dunkirk. For me, when I'm looking at this release schedule for this month, it's like, I hope that studios really were hoping that, or were kind of expecting things to not perform so well, because there was just so much competition. And starting with you, actually, I'll go to Nick first, but how do you see this, like, you know, box office, in that everything was stacked against each other?
Me?
Yeah.
Okay, so my issue with it, like, so you're playing on people's memory of previous films. This was the month of sequels, except for maybe Valerian and Dunkirk. Those would probably be the only two. Like, as far as big box office movies that we expected to take the box office in this month, they were sequels. And on top of that, you're playing off of Spider-Man: Homecoming. Yes, it has that MCU title now, but it's also technically another Spider-Man film we've seen done over again, and people aren't going to be as keen to go see it as they would say to go see a Thor movie or a Justice League movie or something along those lines, because those movies have been hyped up in a certain way. This movie was, like, if you look at advertising for this one, if you look at advertising for War, if you look at advertising for Dunkirk, they were their marketing campaigns were not as strong as previous films for those franchises. They were sort of, I felt like they're under the radar. From my knowledge, from what I've seen, I really didn't see a lot of advertising for Spider-Man Homecoming up until, like, the first last week or so of it before it released. And then War for the Planet of the Apes, I saw one trailer like half a year ago, saw nothing in between. And then I saw it was advertised that the week of its premiere, nothing really like building up to it. No, like, secondary trailers, nothing really to build onto it. Same with Spider-Man. You really didn't have any like secondary, like, eye-opening trailers, except for maybe you had that one where you thought that it was going to be another Iron Man film. That was where a lot of people were worried that the Iron Man was too much involved in the film. But as far as other box office leaders for this month, you haven't really had anything. So I'm not surprised that July has done so crappy. I'm honestly not.
Brandon?
I don't really follow box office news, so I don't really have much commentary, really. I just see the movies when they come out, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I had no idea that July was doing worse than June or better. So, not much to really say.
Well, I mean, and Andy could probably, you know, side with me. It's just, I think July is still doing very well. I mean, if you look at this weekend alone, we had, I think, four movies that did over $20 million at the box office. So, I mean, and every weekend's kind of, and well, I mean, not every, but most weekends have been pretty successful. People have been going to the movies. And we had overcrowded July so much because we were trying to avoid the Wonder Woman, the Transformers, and Despicable Me 3. And while it was wise to stay away from Wonder Woman, it's interesting that the movies we try to avoid in the summer with Transformers, they're not doing that well at all. Like, they're doing way below expectations of what they were hoping. So it's interesting that in hindsight, that this was kind of a terrible idea to release all of the movies, these very highly anticipated, and to make it even more insane, they're all critically acclaimed. If you look at actually Rotten Tomatoes currently, their box office, I mean, they're like the top 10, like only seven top 10 are like 80% or higher. There's only like one not fresh movie, and that's Wish Upon, and that's the number 10. So there was a lot that came out this weekend, and I feel like a lot of people just kind of had a pull and tug, especially with War for the Planet of the Apes and Dunkirk, since there were two war movies coming out nearly at the same time.
So, I see where you're coming from, where you're saying like it was too crowded of a box office, but if you want a film to legitimately do well, even domestically, it needs to do at least $100 million in that first weekend. If you want it to crack that box office, if you want to crack that billion-dollar club, mm-hmm. it's got to do $100 million at least in the first weekend. It has to be that popular. So that means there has to be enough buzz going into it, enough buzz saying, hey, this movie's great, enough people are familiar with it, the average movie goer is gonna go see it. So these weren't, like I said, these weren't really the titles to do that. Beauty and the Beast, you had that because you could see consistently that everyone knew they picked a great actress to come in for it. It was a live action Disney film, so they obviously knew it was gonna first. It was going to win. There was just like no way it was gonna do that. So these I'm not surprised when the top five is the way it is right now. Guardians of the Galaxy is because it's barely gonna scrape into the billion. It's gonna limp into the billion-dollar club by the end of the year, hopefully.
No way.
You don't think?
Not at all.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with that as well because I'm trying to look.
Right now it's at 860.
Yeah.
By the end of the year, I think it could limp into $1 billion when it comes up for home release and all that stuff. It should get you clean up.
But that's not part of the box office.
Yeah, I mean it'll make $1 billion profit, or it'll make $1 billion, but. It won't be at the box office.
Home video, then yeah, a bunch of stuff does, but none of that stuff ever gets tallied because all that studios look at are opening weekends. They don't care about long term unless it like is losing a lot of money. They don't think about that stuff. They just think about the next movie coming out.
Yeah, and I mean it's open. I think it's open in every Guardians 2. It's open in every territory. It's pretty much, you know, it'll be lucky if it finishes at 875 million worldwide. So, So, but there are two currently billion-dollar hits in Beauty and the Beast, which really that's just 90s nostalgic run amok.
Yeah, and I don't want to make it seem like it didn't make a lot of money. Guardians made a lot of money because Marvel's smart with their budgets and stuff. Like 200 sounds a lot, but like. If this was handled by any other studio, like they would have probably doubled like all of their marketing. And honestly, they probably would have went over 200 million for how much effects is put into this movie. So this movie is making good money. It's just, you know, I personally expected it to pass $1 billion easy because of the following from the first.
Yeah, I agree. So, with that said, let's get into the number one movie of this weekend, Dunkirk, the movie that overperformed. And my first question, I want to ask you guys is, why do you think it made $50 million? Because it was projected to do $35 to $40 million this weekend. So,
I think they just downplayed it.
You think they just downplayed it?
I think they downplayed it, like coming out the gate. They didn't. They knew it was going to make about what it made now. They just said they lowballed it for to make it seem more successful than it really was.
Brandon, do you have an opinion on this?
The amount of money it made, you mean? Or?
Yeah, like do you think they downplayed it, or do you, well, like how? Why do you think people churned out for this movie?
With Christopher Nolan's name attached to it, I think they wanted to see it. And that's why I gave it a chance. I mean, I haven't been a fan of Christopher Nolan for the last couple of years, but I was willing to give this one last chance, you know. But yeah, I mean, name recognition.
Andy, why do you think this movie overperformed, other than maybe like they downplayed it?
Christopher Nolan's name does a bit, and then you know, it looks like a good World War II movie, which does well with older audiences, specifically like everybody like over in your 40s or over, a lot of especially like older people, you know, they love going to movies based on real events and stuff like that. So I think that it's a combination.
So,
and then obviously you have all those girls going to see Harry Styles.
Right. Yeah. Who wasn't even like a main character in this movie.
He was in it more than I anticipated. And honestly, he didn't bother me at all. So
I didn't even recognize him.
I saw an interview of him like a couple days ago. And so that's how I knew who he was. Cause I don't watch One Direction. Or listen to them. Sorry, fans. Sorry, 1D fans. It's not my jam.
Are they even a band anymore?
I don't know. I don't care.
I don't think they are. I think that he left the group or somebody left the group.
Okay, so they are a band apart.
No.
Anyway, so starting with you, Brandon. Tell us what you think of Dunkirk.
I didn't like it at all. I know I'm going to get attacked because of this, but I just found it very uninteresting. I like war movies because of the characters. I like movies like Saving Private Ryan, Platoon, Apocalypse Now, some of my favorite ones. And these characters are just two-dimensional. I mean, there was nothing about it that really interested me. There were a couple of compelling scenes, but overall, though, I thought it was really disappointing. Yeah, I mean, I was bored throughout most of it, but I was trying to think of a good reason walking out of the theater why I didn't like it as much. I think it is just because of the characters. I mean, nothing in it was really that interesting to me. I mean, it was just, yeah.
I kind of second him on that. I love the film. Don't get me wrong. It was a great film, but I can see where people would get off with it being a little bit boring on that boring side. There's no one really to latch on to as far as even your main characters, you know, aren't really on screen enough to really get to know them so that you can enjoy some kind of backstory about them so that you can relate with them. It's just,
yeah. I mean, Cillian Murphy was the only character I felt actually had like a intriguing kind of like, not backstory, but like the concept of him being shell-shocked was interesting after that battle. But that's about it. I mean, Mark Rylance is always good, but I mean, he was saving people. I mean, Tom Hardy was just there in the plane. I mean, there wasn't much to really like be intrigued by. I don't know. Just
what's funny is this movie's runtime. I think it's interesting. I don't know if you've seen the runtime for it. It's like an hour and 45 minutes.
It's pretty short. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty short. If it is
an hour and 47. Yeah.
Yeah. If he'd have just taken like another 15, 20 minutes to add on some backstory for these characters, he probably would have gotten way better. He would have probably gotten 100%. I know he's sitting at probably like 98, 95 right now. What is it at Rotten Tomatoes?
I think last time I checked, it was 93.
Yeah, he'd probably have that full 100% if he'd just given them a little bit of backstory. Like even Kenneth Branagh, great performance, just not enough really meat and bones there to really get behind him.
I mean, no one did a bad job by any means. It's not bad performances. It's just that there wasn't much to really, like in terms of character, there wasn't much to really watch. I mean, nothing that interesting to me. So.
Andy, go ahead and then I'll ask my question.
I really enjoyed the film. It started off a bit slow because when it tells you the layout and how the story's being told, it didn't like register with me exactly how that was working until about 20 minutes in. And then I'm like, okay, I got this. And then I enjoyed it from there out a lot. It's one of those things where, yeah, it's not devoting all this time to character, which I can understand if people don't like that, but it's about the experience of the war. And the last 45 minutes to an hour was basically nonstop intensity for me. Like I know what happened, but because I know about the event, but like, I felt, you know, just like, holy crap, like what's going to happen next, like to get them out of here, blah, 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 stuff. And I just was really into it. I liked all the performances. And one thing I really liked, are we doing spoilers yet?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I understand like Tom Hardy, like barely said a word. But I just like the idea well, I don't like the idea. Well, I find it interesting that the character that is considered, like, probably, like, does the most, like, heroic things gets none of the credit and ends up being the one that gets put in a POW. Like, I just thought that was really kind of a backhand to, you know, all that he did. And obviously he's doing it to, like, for just to save whoever he can, and he doesn't care, like, he cares about that more than himself. But I just thought that was really interesting that he did all of, he did more than anybody arguably individually, and then he's the one that doesn't even get to go home. And I don't know, I just, that really struck with me, or stuck with me with that. But I really did enjoy the film, and the quote unquote, what is the word I'm looking for? It was like a huge, like, Nolan was like playing around with the layout of the story and how he delivered it.
The plot structure?
Yeah, the plot structure. I thought that that was really intriguing, and I just really enjoyed the change of pace from your normal war film. And I really enjoyed that. And it's really meant, like I said at the beginning, it's really meant to be an experience film. Like Gravity, I don't like really feel for any of the characters, like personally, because I don't really connect with them, because you don't really get great characters. But that was one of the greatest experiences I've ever had in movie theater, just because of the way it was shot and what was all happening to them. And that's what an experience film is to me, at least. And that's what this was. So that's why I enjoyed it.
Yeah. See, so, I didn't like Gravity either. I mean, I wasn't a fan of Gravity.
I wasn't either. I mean, I didn't like Gravity because of the, just how overhyped it was. I didn't like how.
Yeah. Some movies are like that. Yeah. It's, I mean, it was okay, but.
Well, being a Christopher Nolan movie, like, all of those are overhyped. Like, Interstellar was overhyped. And I thought that that movie was really disappointing, but.
Me too.
I was going to disagree with that, because I like Interstellar for the thought-provoking question of, well, could this happen? And then, like, the actual accuracy of his science was actually Neil deGrasse Tyson did a whole review of the movie, and he said, like, a lot of what was in there was legit science that could happen. It's all theoretical, but it's, like, it's still legitimate. Like, wow, like, he got all that right. The only thing that's kind of that little bit of a gray area is, like, the love thing, and can you really categorize that or quantify it? And that's something you're going to have to take cinematic license for, but, like, I still enjoyed it. It still was a very compelling story, and it still had a lot of gravitas to me, at least to me personally. And I thought everyone had a great performance in that, as opposed to this one where comparing Interstellar to Dunkirk, I could get behind everyone on Interstellar. Almost all the characters I could have some kind of connection to. Dunkirk, I didn't know anything enough about any of these characters to really enjoy them. It was a great film visually, loved it to death. And like I said, it's still a very compelling story, but it's not character driven, which I love character driven shows sometimes. Because to me, that's what really pushes the story, is when I can get behind a character and invest in that character.
Mm-hmm. Well, my thoughts on Dunkirk is, well, first of all, Interstellar, it is actually a well-crafted movie. I think it has issues in sticking the landing of what it's trying to do with, you know, the whole idea of, you know, where is the humanity in space exploration and all that. I get where Nolan and Jonathan Nolan are coming from, but I don't think it completely sticks the landing. And then for Dunkirk, here's the thing. It's interesting because I consider Michael Bay, he makes experience movies. I mean, his movies, you sit in a movie and you're having an experience. The difference between Bay's experience movies and Nolan's Dunkirk is that he actually crafts a story that you can follow within this. He crafts this whole in it the whole way through. Because for me, Dunkirk, I was in it the moment shots were running in the theater. Like, the moment bullets started flying, that's when I became intrigued. Because the and while, yes, I agree, I will say that it's not always, I don't know if it's still appropriate to not use violence, not show violence in horror movies, but that opening is super intense because you're just seeing everyone drop dead except this one character, and we're following him as he's going to the beach to join 400,000 other men that are trying to leave Dunkirk as well.
I was going to mention that. Well, go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
But yeah, but the thing is, you know, I was in it the whole way through. Like, and that's what I love about this movie is I was in it the whole way through, much like I was for Inception and much like I was for the first two Batman movies. And even Memento. I even, you know, will go for Memento as well. Like, Nolan is, he hits you. When you watch a Nolan movie, you hit the ground running and you don't stop until it's over. And that's what I love about this movie. And I loved how tight it was. And I loved how...
Notice you skipped the Prestige.
What?
I said, I noticed you skipped the Prestige. Continue.
I haven't seen the Prestige in a long time, so...
I remember liking it, but... I was going to mention this, too. Yeah, speaking of... I do have a problem naturally with like PG-13 war movies because they are censoring violence to get a wider audience. I was going to give this one a pass. I do kind of give it a pass because it's about an evacuation. And it's about rescuing people. So it's not really like a battlefield kind of movie. Like,
it's a survival story. Running.
It is, yeah. But even with that, though, I felt like I knew what the stakes were the whole time in the movie, but I didn't feel like they really built up the tension enough. Like,
I disagree.
At all. I mean, I didn't feel like things just kind of happened. I mean, it was just very, and you know, I think the reason why is because of the structure. I mean, speaking of structure, Memento comes to mind, but in that movie, it goes backwards, or part of the movie goes backwards because he has short-term memory loss. I mean, with this one, I don't feel like the structure had to be there this way. I mean, the plane sequence could have been cut out entirely with Tom Hardy. That could have been gone. It could have just been about Mark Rylance saving and his, you know, the kids saving people and showing the, you know, the beachfront kind of storyline. I mean, it could have just been those two storylines combining together. I mean,
I can see like a 3-hour film where Nolan is just showing us the brutality of this, of the week, because keep in mind the mole storyline with Harry Styles' character and Fionn Whitehead's story and the French guy, like their storyline, that could have been a really interesting, compelling 3-hour movie about just them sitting there and just like waiting it out for survival. However, and then the last like 30 minutes of the movie, it could have been Mark Rylance's story. And then you see, but the thing is, I feel like we've seen enough of those movies. I feel like we've seen enough of those movies to where if Nolan did that typical structure of we see the mole and then the last like 30 minutes, we get the other two storylines or even just one of them, I feel like it would have just not as well. And it would have added his own stamp. And I feel like directors should put their own stamp to whatever, you know, genre they're going to do. I feel like they should try to. And I feel like Nolan, by going through the structure of like basically saying, oh, and this happens here and this happens here, and this is how it all connects, and then it all collates to this, you know, the final 10 minutes of the movie, I felt like that was actually masterfully well done, like for a structure. The point where I have to watch it one more time to see if there are any flaws with the movie, because I was just really enjoying my experience watching the whole movie. I mean, I don't know, Nick, if you saw my face the entire time.
You had like this glazed like look of awe on your face the entire time.
I know. It was just like,
can someone explain what an experience movie is? Because aren't all movies experiences if they're good enough?
True. I mean, not true.
That doesn't make any sense to me. I mean,
some movies are story movies, some movies are character driven movies, some movies are experience movies, some movies are simply there for the ride. For example, The Room would be an experience movie. I would never ever recommend that movie to anyone except simply to experience.
Yeah, true. I think for most action adventure movies, or not just war movies, if it's good enough, it's an experience. I mean, you know, I should more than that, you know, like And is this movie visually well done? Well, sure it is. But I mean, the only time I ever felt like there was tension building was when they were interrogating the guy, the French guy, and bullets were flying through the boat. And that's about it. I mean, there wasn't very many scenes where I felt like there was tension building up and it was like that intense for me. Two or three scenes tops.
I disagree. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time and just admiring Hoyt Van Hoytama. Hoytama's, you know, IMAX DP work the entire time. Like, it was just incredible. Like, it was just this incredible, masterful experience that, you know, it's just like, here's the thing. I know some people are like, I don't want to see a movie. I don't need the side of a building to see a movie. I get it. I get that. But if you are to see this movie, get a bit, like a nice huge screen. Don't go into some shoebox theater. You know, get a theater that has a good size screen and good sound.
Did you go see it again, by the way, in 70 millimeter yet? Because they gave us a refund ticket for that.
Yeah. Well, for those who, I should explain what Nick's talking about. Nick and I did not get the chance to see it in digital, I mean, in a 70 millimeter at the in Buford, because they had like some malfunctions. So we only got to see it in IMAX digital. However, with that though, I still argue this is one of my favorite IMAX experiences of all time, because the picture like still expands and you still get this wide depth of, you know, pixels that like gives you this high resolution look to the whole film. So if I will go and see it in IMAX 70 millimeter or give them one more shot, yes, I will. I just need to find the time to do it.
I was planning to see it in 70 millimeter in IMAX, but when I saw it was $21 for a ticket, I just backed away. I can't spend that much for a movie ticket. I mean, maybe Star Wars.
Oh, honey, don't worry maybe, about that. Yeah. I've spent a lot more on movies, especially had to bring a date to this one.
Yeah, I can't spend that much on a movie ticket. I mean, that's the cost. That's how much it would cost to buy it on Blu-ray when it comes out.
Yeah, that's the... Yeah, because here's the thing. And that's the reason why I don't do IMAX all the time. I just use it. I really only do it nowadays for Nolan and maybe the occasional superhero movie. But yeah, I don't do IMAX that much because I just want to see it on IMAX 70, see it on, you know, digital and have it like crop to widescreen, and that'd be, you know, a wasted amount of space for a big huge screen like the one in the Regal Theater in Georgia. So that's why I don't go that often to IMAX. I'll only just do it if there's a Nolan movie or the occasional superhero movie. But with that said, though, I think this is one of the better experience movies. And Brandon, you asked like, what is an experience movie? And Nick has a really good qualifications there. Like, I would never have seen it that way. But the way I classify it is, there are films, there are movies, and then there are experiences. I consider movies like Gravity, Fury, Inception, and Dunkirk to be experience movies where you're just watching the experience. I'll even throw in the Transformers movies as experience movies. They're not great experiences. It's movies. They're experience.
I didn't see Fury, but I didn't like Inception or Gravity because of those reasons. There wasn't anything to be interested in with them. So same thing with this one. I mean, I've been disappointed by the last four Christopher Nolan movies now since Dark Knight came out. By Inception, Dark Knight Rises, Interstellar, now this one. And
How do you hate Inception?
I didn't hate Inception. I mean, I thought it was decent when I saw it, but it's part of the hype, really. I think that's the reason why I sort of dislike it, which is a bad reason to dislike a movie. But I was just bored throughout most of it. I thought there were a few cool moments, but the characters just weren't interesting to me. The concept wasn't kind of grew stale by the end, you know?
Hey, Brandon, maybe you should stay away from the internet for a week. I mean, when the movie
when I saw out. It, I thought it was fine. I just was kind of, it was an average movie for me when I first saw it. It didn't cause me not to like it. It's just, you know, it's one of those cases where hype kind of ruins it stuff, you know, because I was hyped for it at the time.
Yeah, there's only one like mediocre Nolan movie, and that is The Dark Knight Rises. So, so far, I have not actually watched Insomnia, and it's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Nolan's first like five movies. You know, Dark Knight's one of my favorites. Memento's great. Batman Begins. I remember liking Prestige. I don't remember the movie very well, though. I saw it like 11 years ago when it first came out. So
yeah,
I want to see it again, though. Yeah.
By the rules of Andy here of the 10-year rule, I have not seen the Prestige because I have not seen it since I was a kid.
And that's a shame. That movie is spectacular.
It is fantastic. Fantastic.
I remember it had an awesome ending. I remember the ending because it was such a great like plot twist kind of like realization.
Yeah. That's what I remember of the movie is it has this incredible ending. I don't know why I've never returned back to it.
It's on Netflix, actually.
I'll watch it soon. But I've seen Following and Memento and the Dark Knight trilogy and every movie afterwards. So Insomnia and Prestige I need to check out. So with that said, do we have any more? Andy, you've been kind of quiet for a while. Do you have any more thoughts on Dunkirk?
If you like Nolan, go see it. You're probably going to like it. Like I said, I found it to be really intense, especially the last like 45 minutes to an hour. So I enjoyed my time there. If somebody wants to go see it again, I wouldn't argue, but I don't really, it didn't like blow me away like some of his other movies, but definitely good movie. And I can see why some people would be overhyped because everybody was, well, not everybody, but like this was on a lot of most anticipated lists. And a lot of people were saying that this is their, outside of Star Wars, this was their most anticipated movie of the year. So I can totally see why people would be disappointed.
I'll say this much about it, and I'm going to agree with you a lot. Like I said, I enjoyed the film, but I'm one thing I loved about this film that it didn't, like a lot of films do that nowadays, is it didn't hold your hand through it. I didn't realize that it was three different plot points until, honestly, until I saw Cillian Murphy in the first section. And that was when it sort of had that oh shit moment. Like there might have been some other hints earlier that about it, but like that first little bit where you saw it all at once, I was blown away by it when it came full circle. I was like, okay, so this is three different times, and that's and they're interweaving. And I love how he did that. He didn't hold my hand through the film. I enjoyed that. But like I said, I would have loved a lot more character development, a lot of more character backstory, just so I could latch onto who these characters were. At least names would have been nice for.
All right. Yeah. I really enjoyed the movie. I think it's top 10 material. Really, we've been talking about some of the movies that came out this month, and a lot of stuff this month has just been excellent all the way through. I mean, War for the Planet of the Apes is a really good movie, and Spider-Man Homecoming is probably the best Spider-Man Spider-Man 2. And then The Big Sick is really good. So we've had a really good month of movies, and I hope we continue this trend next week with Atomic Blonde. But before we get to Atomic Blonde, let's get to Valerian and Luc Besson's $210 million sci-fi epic that not a lot of people went to see.
His very pretty dump on the American box office.
So, Andy, what did you think of Valerian?
It is colorful. It has some good ideas, but mostly is poorly executed with not great leads in the story. I'm kind of done with Dane DeHaan. I think that the only movie that I've liked him in was Place Beyond the Pines. I can't think of anything else I've actually liked him in where I'd recommend seeing it because of him. I just don't, something about him just doesn't work with me, I don't care. I can't, what's the girl's name? I can't even think of it.
Cara Delevingne.
She's better than she was in Suicide Squad, but that's saying very little. Together, their chemistry was okay at best, and all of the marriage proposals got old very quickly. The only scene that is noteworthy to me was the one where they were in the shopping place and they're like in another, like on another world, through the boxes. That was the only like unique thing that really stood out to me. The story really didn't care for anything or anyone in it. It wasn't even a real ride to me. Most of the stuff that they did didn't make sense to me. They would say one thing, do another, stuff like that. And it's just not good.
Well, before I get to Nick, Brandon, do you have any questions about Valeria?
Yeah, because I didn't see it. Well, I don't know what to ask. I didn't know much about this movie, like when it was being, I just saw the advertisements. I mean, it did look colorful. I'll give it that. I mean, but it looked like your typical sci-fi movie. And so, I mean, what is the plot? I mean, what's it about? Because the subtitle sounds so vague. It's like City of a Thousand Planets. Is that what it's called? Is that the full
title? Yeah. The space station that we have orbiting around Earth. Once other species like aliens come to Earth, they hook up to it and it just keeps building. And that's why it's a city of a thousand planets, because it's just like this one place that like they just keep adding to, and like all like there's just like a shit ton of species like of different aliens. So it's like a thousand different planets, I guess. Like they don't say how many actually are on there, but it gets to the point where it's too heavy that they it's gonna like start falling into the Earth's atmosphere. So then they just hook up these like Iron Man like things that they use in Homecoming to push it out into the Milky Way, so it goes on its own like trajectory, and then it just like floats in space by itself as like its own city. And then like later on, they go there because a species that no one had come across before is like inside of it, like trying to get these energy or get an energy like pearls from their planet that was destroyed, so that they can go home or go on their own, because
they can rebuild their world.
Yeah, and it's really flat. This is really disappointing because
it looked flat. I
love the Fifth Element, and I was hoping for something. I wasn't expecting it to be that good, but something in that vein, and it really wasn't.
Nick, Brandon, do you have any, go Nick.
This movie was an entirely missed opportunity. Like, there was so much potential this movie could have had, and it chose not to. Like, I would have loved to, like, it's called Valerian, the City of a Thousand Planets, but they don't really focus on the City of a Thousand Planets. They focus mainly on what is Valerian doing, and like him in this completely arbitrary plot and this whole, that really, and then like they have like a bunch of stuff that they just have, they throw in there just to say it's in there, and they don't really elaborate on it. Like the council, or like these little boxes that they're using to possess these other these holographic versions of themselves and what they're doing, and like the slums on these different planets and these different beaches. And it's such a missed opportunity of a movie. There is so much more they could have talked about and explained more, and then they could have focused less on, because honestly the plot was just very B grade. And then like even then the reveal is like, oh, you committed mass genocide on a planet. We've seen that. Haven't we seen that before? Like that's been, they still left from Firefly. What else? It was such an underrated, or not an under, it was such an underwhelming film as far as what it could have been.
Oh God. Okay. So there's a lot to unpack. First of all, this movie is disappointing. I don't know if any of the three of us have stated that enough. It's very, I don't even want to say disappointing. Just like, a total disaster. It's a beautiful disaster because shot. It's very beautifully well, like the visual effects in this movie are A quality. Like everything on a design, technical, everything you can think of level is, you know, there, it's all firing on all cylinders. The problem with this movie is Luc Besson like wrote the script in 6 weeks and just shit it out and then just said, okay, we're going to get the most, we're going to get for this leading man, this, you know, Han Solo type character, this anti-hero, we're going to get that kid from the Chronicle, that whiny brat from the Chronicle.
No, we're going to get, the second version of Green Goblin from Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
And then for the lead actress, we're going to get that girl who did the hula hooping dance in Suicide Squad. We're gonna get her to play this strong female character. Really? Why? And then to make it worse, you waste Clive Owen in a movie where he's only in it for 10 minutes. And he's given, like, he really is just there for 5 minutes, then kicked out, and then comes back towards the end. Just like a hair of the problems of this movie. Because the problem with this movie is that Luc Besson really loves this world that he's playing in. He loves Valerian, and it's very obvious because he loves it, because almost every 5 minutes there's like a whole different subplot about this like species that we meet, and we interact with them for 5 minutes. And and what's even more crazy is this movie where characters just do this one, you know, little thing. Like there's a whole subplot about where Lorelai, the character played by Cara Delevingne, she gets kidnapped by this race of other aliens. I don't remember what they're called. And so Dane DeHaan has to go and find a way to like disguise himself as one of the aliens to get in, because they don't allow people in. They don't allow outsiders in. So he has to go and watch a whole striptease or go to a strip club, find this, find Rihanna who can mimic everything, and then go and have a 15-minute fight sequence with all these aliens.
Or he slaughters the entire royal family.
What? Oh God, yeah. I mean, causing multiple violations and then getting one other like innocent person killed. He gets the Rihanna character who is basically this great subtext about illegal immigration, about how like it's really tough to be like in between like two different, you know, species, and she gets murdered like in 5 minutes. And that's just like, I could just go on and on and on about the problems of this movie, but the biggest problem with this movie that I think embodies the entire film is that in terms of the script is Dane DeHaan punches Clive Owen, the military leader of like Valerian, or the military representation of Earth. And then 5 minutes later, he's like, I can't break the rules. I can't break the rules, Valerian. I'm the rule follower. And I think in that moment, in a provost screening full of thousands of people, well, hundreds of people in Atlanta, and I think I screamed, well, what just happened 5 minutes ago?
Exactly.
And you're just like, it's just like, my God, Luc Besson, he just needed, things that are problematic in this movie is you just need another writer to come in and like kind of develop, work on the script some more, so more to the plot.
Dane DeHaan is not charming. Like, I could have seen this guy have been, Valerian could have been a really charming character, as far as like he had that he could have been like the character of Valerian could have been a very roguishly charming character that would have been nice, and you could see that sort of build off the chemistry. If they'd at least picked a decent actor, I'm pretty sure this movie would have bumped over that 55% mark.
It's like if they hired, like if they hire Dom DeLuise to play Hans. No, it's not that bad. It's like if they had hired
Bill Pullman to play Han Solo, but continue.
Who?
Bill Pullman.
Oh, okay, yeah.
From Space.
Kale, I have one question. Is it an experience movie?
What? I guess. What do you think?
I was joking. I wasn't think, really Nick? Serious.
Yeah. Well, actually, Nick, Andy, what do you guys think? Is it an experience movie?
No.
No.
I think that there are my definition of experience movie is very limited. I think there's only like a handful of movies that I would consider experience movies.
Based on the one I gave a little earlier, this is not one of those movies you have to see just to see it. This is one of those movies, like an experience movie to me is a movie you have to see, regardless of how good or bad it is, that you have to see it because of what it does. This movie is forgettable.
Yeah, that's the thing is I will not think, because this movie is not bad. Maybe it is. Like I was about to say, maybe it's bad enough to put on a best or worst list. But the film is, you know, it's not like the Book of Henry where it's just like, it should be studied so people can know like how bad a movie can be. But it's not a movie I don't think people will remember. I guess there will be a cult audience for this movie already. I've already seen like some people on Twitter like praise the movie for what it is.
There's only there is one scene that made me like absolutely die laughing, and it's only because of how ridiculous it is. And that's that scene where that female alien is trying to get what's her name to try on the dresses, and that face she's giving him. Like to me, that was like I was dying laughing because of like it was just so ridiculous. There was absolutely no reason for that scene to be in there, but at the same time, I was crying laughing at how bad it was. Because I'm like,
yeah. Yeah, and if I had any positives for the movie, it's actually the opening itself. Like, when we're seeing, like, the International Space Station grow to being, like, this planet full of, you know, different species, essentially, Brandon, it's like United Nations of like, the whole galaxy. Seeing it, like, grow and build, and then seeing it grow and build so huge that it has to leave, like, that was actually really a really cool concept of the movie. And then you get to the opening scene with this like species of like X. But what's so great about it is there's no like lines of dialogue in that entire opening. Like from when we're doing the International Space Station, when we get to the characters, Lorelei and Valerian, there's almost no lines of dialogue, and it's all told in action, and it's really well constructed to see like the whole like this whole species, like their planet destroyed, and you see the devastation of it, and it's actually really well done. It's just when we get to Valerian and Lorelei, and we're just dropped into their relationship without any context, any knowledge as to who they are or what their relationship is like, and we're supposed to follow them for another 2 hours. This movie doesn't work for me at all, except for the opening. Even more
side quests that she had to go do just to find out one little bit of information. That entire side quest, a waste of time. This movie was seriously like could have been like a really good video game. That's pretty much it.
It could have been a TV show, really. This could have been a TV show.
What I was telling you earlier, like it's a wasted opportunity because you have these a city of 1,000 planets. You have thousands of different races in one centralized location. You still focus on the humans?
Yeah. I understand like you need us to like be our guide through the world. Because that's what the first Guardians movie does as well with Peter Quill. However, protagonists are nowhere near as interesting as the world we're in.
Like, I would have loved to see more of Rihanna's character. She had a really interesting, like, I would have loved to see more of her. I would have loved to have seen more of that little, you know, that the characters from the beginning where that with John Goodman's character, he voices the character. I would have loved to see more of his character or more of his him. Actually, I think if you'd have shown him trying to hunt back down, I thought that would have been a lot better of a story than the story we got. If you actually had like cut back to him getting to the City of a Thousand Planets and doing it that way, I thought it would have been a lot more interesting of a plot story of them trying to run and hide from him because they stole the thing like sort of make it like a like the pearl is the MacGuffin and now two vying parties are trying to get it back. I thought that would have been a lot better of a plot than what we got, which was shitty.
Yeah, this is not a good movie. And look, we have two original, or actually three technically original movies. I mean, Valerian is based off of a French comic, but by all means, it is an original film compared to what we have today. Compared to what original, like it's not a, you know, I guess it could be a franchise starter, but it's not like based off of like this huge property that everyone knows. And for there to be three movies and to see like two of them do really well and to see another great, it really just shows that it shows a little bit of like where people are willing to go with original movies. Cause Dunkirk, like, yeah, it's based off of an event, but it's not based off of a comic or anything like that. It's not based off of something huge or recognizable. So I feel like for me, interesting weekend to see the two original movies, Girls Trip and Dunkirk, do really well. And then Valerian, it's like, okay, Valerian was just a step too far for a lot of people. But then again, to also be fair to audiences, this movie was not very well marketed. And actually, I was going to ask you guys, like, what did you guys think of the marketing campaign? Because I thought it was kind of, I understood the movie, what it was from the campaign too, but I felt like this was a hard movie to sell. If there was any way the marketing campaign could have done any better. All at once.
So, like I said, all movies in July really were underwhelming as far as advertisement goes. Like there was no real push for like what was going on. Like I didn't really remember. I forgot about Valerian after I saw the first trailer. I'd forgotten about it. There's just when I saw it again for like a couple of weeks before the trailer again, but a couple of weeks before I saw the movie, I was like, oh, that's right, that is coming out then, huh? I'll go see that. But it was nothing like, hey, it wasn't like, oh, I'm hyped for this shit. As opposed to like Ready Player One just came out, the trailer for that alone, and I hope God Spielberg markets this fantastically. But I'm hoping to, yeah. But it's just, that goes back to how you advertise a movie. Like Star Wars is going to be great once we get closer to December. It's going to be hype the crap out of it, but they're slowly building to that. There was no slow build for this. There's no slow build for any of these movies in July right now. I think like they were just sort of thrown out there last minute or thrown out there when they were announced. People forgot about them for a while, and then they're like, "Oh crap, these movies are coming. We gotta push." So they throw, last minute they try and push these movies into our laps. And granted, they're great movies. Some of them are, but like the other ones, it's just like there's a lot more on my radar that I'm looking forward to. And these weren't one of them. None of these movies were like I have to see these this year.
Andy, what do you think?
I don't think there's any good way to market this movie. It honestly should have came out like in February or January. It probably would have done a little bit better just because people don't have high expectations then. It's just I don't know what he sees in the material. I haven't read the material, so I can't really judge that, I guess. But the fact that he's already written a second and working on the third, he might as well just throw that away right now and use it for like warmth, because they're not going to make another movie. this one's marketing was garbage because it's a garbage movie, bottom line.
Nick, were you going to say something?
What is the the box office for Valerian? I'm trying to find it right now. How much did it make?
1 second.
Hold on, let me go back. Internet Research, the podcast.
I'm looking at it too, trying to find it.
17.
Yeah, it was 17 million. Wide gross is coming yet.
It's not foreign yet. It's just 20. It's sitting at 21 domestic right now. 21 million domestic.
Yeah, and it currently has a budget of 100. Or on Box Office Mojo, it's a $177.2 million. So,
it made.
Is there any 1%. More final thoughts?
It made 1% of its budget. Opening weekend.
One? Are you? No, it made 10.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good. Sorry, Luc Besson. Try better next time. maybe make a movie and not rip it off. Make an original movie and not try to rip it off like you did with what was that one movie with Guy Pearce? Lockout. That was a ripoff of Escape from New York.
Yeah, but that one was at least entertaining because characters.
And it wasn't direct, and it had other writers.
Yeah, and Guy Pearce is charismatic as fuck.
Yeah. So do we have any more final thoughts on Valerian?
Don't see it. Don't give it your money.
Watch it on Netflix if you can, but that's about it.
No, just forget it exists altogether. Watch Fifth Element.
Try better next time, Luc Besson. Brandon, did we sell you on this movie or did we sell you to not see it?
No, not really, but I wasn't planning to see it anyway, so you guys should give me more reasons not to see it. But.
There are worse movies like Transformers and like Rough Night and Ghost in the Shell.
Anything to do with Amy Schumer?
Yeah, I don't see those movies.
Yeah. Oh, we need to have one. We need to have a talk at the end of the summer about Rough Night. That movie was... the more I think about that movie, the more I hate it.
No, I'm good.
Yeah. Anyway.
So anything to do with Melissa McCarthy?
No, she's not in it.
She's not in it.
Any movie involving her, don't go see it.
I mean, her work in Paul Feig is pretty good, but...
The only reason I watch Spy is because Jason Statham is another level of crazy awesome.
He is pretty funny in the movie.
I just hate how she's making money off of being who she is because of her weight. And then on top of all of that, it would be less funny if she wasn't that weight. She'd just be a dick, which she is a dick. Like, she gets away with it because she's fat.
Anywho, I think we're ready for plugins. Starting with you, Andy, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at The Talking Can. Come talk to me about anything that you want. Movies are preferred, but I'll talk about whatever. And then come and listen to my random rants and raves and try to figure out where my mind is to even come up with the shit that I do. Sometimes like I'm just like sitting there like thinking about stuff and I just start getting angry as I'm like text or tweeting. It's really weird.
Nick, Brandon, do y'all have any Twitter handles?
Yeah, follow me. I don't even use Twitter that much. You can tweet me at Nick_Briz, BRIZ. Follow me on Instagram at Mountains Make the Man. All one word. See my photography there. I'm trying to hype that up right now, and then that's pretty good thing to have for me.
And Brandon, you don't have a Twitter, right?
I have a profile on Facebook, and I post something once every 2 months. And that's about it. So not really.
Okay. And you can find me on Twitter at MovieKale, and then you can also follow this podcast at The Youth Critic. And then you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHZ Network. Please check us out. Leave a comment. Tell us if we're making a shit show or a good show. And also, don't be afraid to leave your thoughts on movies on our comment section on iTunes. Everyone, for joining us. As far as the Secrets of NIMH retrospective, I'm not sure when that'll come out. I'm going to try and record an episode of it tomorrow, but we'll see. Other than that, thanks everyone for joining in, and we will be back with you next week for Atomic Blonde, the excuse, or also known as the excuse to not talk about the Emoji Movie.
All right, I was going to say, also Greed B, every sci-fi spy film you've seen, or not sci-fi, every spy film you've ever seen, ever.
Probably. And bye.
I chose this life. And someday, it's going to get me killed. But not today.
Lorraine Broughton, expert in intelligence collection and hand-to-hand combat.
Agent Gascoigne was killed last night. Did you know him?
Enough to say hello.